morning, everyone. This is Tuesday, July 12th, and I am Carolyn Yeager bringing you the Revisionist Report. As promised, my guest today is Wilf Hank, a very knowledgeable Holocaust revisionist living in British Columbia, Canada. Wilf was on this program before when it was a Saturday program and informed us about the history of Czechoslovakia, where he was actually born. He lived all of his childhood and young adult years in Germany, emigrating to Canada sometime in the 1970s. Thus, he has the native knowledge of the German language, which is necessary to do serious revisionist work, and is also fluent in English. Wilf, along with Thomas Cues, started the Inconvenient History Revisionist blog in May 2009, I believe that's when it was, which can be found at www.revblog.com. One word, revblog.codoh.com. I first came across him when I read some of his blogs about traitors in the Third Reich, in the armed forces, and the intelligence service. I was so impressed with his research and all the original sources he used that I wrote to him to tell him so, because I had done some writing about that and was interested in that particular topic. Later, I submitted something of my own to the blog, and he recommended it be published. So we've been friends ever since. We kind of think along the same lines. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to this program. Good morning, Wilf.
Good morning, Carolyn.
Well, it's so nice to hear you and to know that you're much better. The last time I talked about you, you were having a little bit of a medical problem, which didn't turn out to be quite as serious as we feared at first. So let's be grateful for these kinds of things, right? And
yes.
I'm going to just let you start right out. And with your information about partisan activity in World War II, you can introduce it in whatever way you want and take it wherever you want to take it.
Okay. Just like everything else with related to the history of the Third Reich, this is a huge, huge subject, and I am not really anywhere near having dealt with it yet. But what I would like to just this morning here is to say is that the partisans, right after the war, and I lived in Germany at that time, in 1945, there was, from soldiers that were returning from the Eastern Front, the topics were of the lack of hygiene in the Eastern territories, lice and so on and so forth, and the German authorities had a huge problem with that in their camps. And the next topic was partisans. We had one when we know that the Germans from the Eastern parts of Germany, East Prussia and Silesia were expelled. We had two families staying at our place. They arrived somewhere in the spring of 1945, if memory serves. I was only 8 years old then, but at that time...
Okay, you were living where?
In Germany at that time.
And who were these people who visited, who stayed with you?
They were total strangers. They just refugees from the Eastern territories. There were two families, and our house wasn't. My dad had inherited a small farm, and that's where we spent the war years. It's a little place called Oberpauske. It's a little town, and we spent.
All right. Well, I hear the music. That's good that I can hear it, and we will be back in 3 minutes and continue, Will.
Okay.
The Berkeylite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeylite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com. Where reality shatters illusion.
Gentlemen, we're going to get underway now. I'm Carolyn Yeager. I'm here with Wilf Heinck, and he was telling us about German refugees from the East that stayed at his family's home in Germany, which was close to the borders, whatever border that was now at that time, in 1945. So please pick up where you left off, Will.
Yeah, okay. And I want to make this short. Anyway, one of the families, their son was on the Eastern Front, and wonder upon wonder, one day, and I can still see it, we had the gates on the property locked, but there was a gap underneath. And there was a knock on the gates, and all we could see is these army boots underneath. And we thought, oh, my God, what now? Because that was the time already when the Russians had liberated us. And we opened the door, and here stands Walter, the son that they weren't sure where he was at. Anyway, they had a bit of a reunion, and he talked, and that's what I'm trying to say here, is the topic turned to partisans more often than not. And that was in East Germany. I have to stress that, because in East Germany, the topic of partisans was, they were bragging about the fact that the partisans helped to win the war, and they did. They did. They played an enormous part in it. Then when I moved to the West, and Dr. Aschenauer in his book, Krieg ohne Grenzen, War Without Borders, also comments on it. In the West, in the middle of the 50s, I moved in 54, the partisans had almost disappeared, and this, what later became known as the Holocaust, it wasn't known under that name at that time, started to come out. So the partisans in Western historiography, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. It started to disappear. They were never mentioned again because it somehow did not fit in with the emerging story of the Holocaust. Because right now, these Einsatzgruppen that we are going to get into, rapid response forces or active groups, action groups, whichever way you want to translate it, they're portrayed as Jew killers, not as partisan fighting units. We're now told that their purpose was to search these vast expanses of Russia for Jews and kill them. And right after the war in East Germany, that was not the case. Partisans were mentioned and talked about. In West Germany, and I need to talk a little...
Whatever you need to talk about.
Yeah, I need to talk a little bit about that. In West Germany, as the Holocaust goes, there was no talk of Auschwitz or any of the Eastern camps when I arrived in 1954. And it hadn't changed much. We left, by the way, we came to Canada in 59. And when we left, it hadn't changed much. If there was mention of the Holocaust, which was very little, it was about Dachau, Buchenwald, Bergen-Belsen, and these were the camps mentioned as extermination camps at that time.
Let me break in here just for a second. It sounds like I made an error when I said you came to Canada in the 1970s. I don't know where I got that. You just said you came to Canada in 1959, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I stand corrected on that. All right. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, that's okay. It's just a small point, because at that time, I'm just trying to say, at that time, there was talk of, in West Germany, of course, and when I came to Canada as well, the Second World War was still fought. The Holocaust it wasn't really a topic at that, and now it's front and center. At that time, when I came to Canada the first time, I went for alcoholic refreshment for a beer after work. Some people next table invited me over, and I told them my English is lousy. It doesn't matter. 2 years later, I was responsible for the Second World War, but but not the Holocaust. Like I say, the Holocaust was never an issue.
Yeah,
anyway,
well, I recall that too, because I never heard anything about it growing up. You know,
yeah.
But certainly I was very much aware of the war,
mm-hmm.
and that was always, you know, coming up here and there and so on. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Dr. Stakely, your guest yesterday, Dr. Tobin from Australia, mentioned that in his book, The Auschwitz Myth, he writes that for at least 10 years afterwards, up to 15 years, Auschwitz was never mentioned. This wasn't a topic. Getting back to Dachau was mentioned. Hitchcock had made a film about Dachau that was shown at the IMT, I believe. And I've seen that film.
Alfred Hitchcock, he was working for the United States military at the time, along with many Hollywood filmmakers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was he made a propaganda film about it. Talking, you know, nobody should say that they didn't know, and so on and so forth, and indicating that mass murder took place. But these camps were easily accessible, and when people started to look closer at them in the 50s, questions were raised. They were saying, how do you mean gas chamber? What gas chamber? And this prompted a German historian, Dr. Martin Brosart, to publish an article in a Hamburg weekly, Die Zeit, and he was saying neither in Dachau nor in Bergen-Belsen nor Buchenwald were Jews or other prisoners gassed, and that the mass extermination of Jews by gassing began in 1941-42 and occurred exclusively In a few facilities selected and equipped with appropriate technical installation, above all in the occupied Polish territories.
But now, who was it that said this? Are you quoting Brozat?
Yeah, that is okay. Brozat. And he was working at that time for the Institute of Zeitgeschichte, Institute for Contemporary History.
Which is quite left, right?
Oh, it is. And it is a let's call it a politically correct institution.
Right.
I had asked for a material, and they just denied it. They don't want to do nothing with revisionism. They're happy with the official version as is, and you know, be that as it may. But anyway, this Brozat article is now, starting about 10 years ago, has been turned around, because what happened after that article was published, the first revisionists, and Rassigny was one of the first ones, but I don't know whether he mentioned it, but some of them said, look, all the stories about gassings in Dachau, Bergen-Belsen, Buchenwald, were based on eyewitness testimonies. It now turns out that these testimonies were false. Why should I believe what happened in Auschwitz and in any other? It's also just based on eyewitness testimony. Mm-hmm. And that was a dilemma for them. It is now being spun to say that Brozat actually meant no mass gassings took place. Nowhere does he say that in that article, but we know how the story changes and how it is made to fit. There is... this is important, because what I call this the first Ostwanderung, the first journey to the east of the crime scene. Because at first the crime scene was in Germany proper. Then it moved into area that was not accessible at that time. And we mustn't forget that the border was an iron curtain. There was nobody allowed to investigate. So the Auschwitz story and the others developed, but nobody has ever done any investigation. It just based on eyewitness testimony. Right. There's now again, there is talk about, yeah, well, there were some gassings in Dachau. It's based on, I think the guy is called Dr. Blaha, a Czech Jew, and it's very questionable evidence. And the other camp that has been totally resurrected, if you will, rose up from the ashes, is Sachsenhausen. Sachsenhausen was located, or is located, at that time in East Germany. And as I mentioned already, in East Germany, the Holocaust was never an issue.
You know, Sachsenhausen was the closest camp to Berlin, right?
Yes, it was. It was actually Oranienburg. It was actually a suburb of Berlin, if you will. And now it is being resurrected. There is a huge memorial there. You can just go on Google and type in Sachsenhausen. I can spell it.
We've got about 30 seconds before we have to. Go ahead.
Okay, and what they're showing is a footing, only a footing, a concrete footing of what used to be the gas chamber, they claim. The building itself had been blown up in the early 1950s by what became later the East German Army.
All right. Okay, well, we'll continue this. When we get back, we're going to take a short commercial break.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror, or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, the government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper. Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experience process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees. Just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Introducing the new Go Berkey Kit, the first of its kind portable water purification system for those on the go. The new Go Berkey system has an amazing output of about a gallon an hour. Each Go Berkey kit includes a one-quart high-quality stainless steel system, complete with a black Berkey purification element, a generic sports bottle, and a nylon carrying case. The whole kit weighs a mere 2.25 pounds. With an expected element life of around 3,000 gallons, you can refill the Go Berkey system up to an incredible 12,000 times before needing to replace the element. The new Go Berkey kit is perfect for backpacking, hiking, emergency packs, bug-out bags, international travel, car emergency kits, or for your desk at home or at work. Get your Go Berkey kit today for only $139 by calling 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. The online store, it's a featured product.
Would you please continue where you left off?
Yeah, sure I can. Yeah, the music isn't especially nice anyway.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, the East Germans, as I said, blew up that what was supposedly a gas chamber. There was a film made by the Russians about this gas chamber. It was shown at the trial of the Russian trial of the commandant of Sachsenhausen, Keindl was his name, and that film was shown, and it showed, the only picture I have ever seen is a person standing beside a black box. We're told that this is the control unit that controlled the amount of Zyklon B gas that was introduced into the gas chamber, with a Russian guard standing beside him. So they showed a film of a working gas chamber, pretending or making it as if it was real. Yet, in the 1950s, they allowed the East German, at that time there were police force, called the police force, to blow that building up. And at the same time, the Russians were busy refitting the crematoria one in Auschwitz, in the main camp, the building a gas chamber out of the morgue. And this has been admitted to. So the question has to be asked, why did they not keep this building if it was a functional gas chamber? This would then, now we could look at it and could see how a gas chamber worked. It was supposedly a working unit. And
well, of course, and this is their crude way in which they do this stuff. And people don't learn enough about it to understand, but obviously they blew it up because it wasn't a gas chamber, and they had made up all these stories about it, right?
That's the only logical conclusion. Exactly. There is no other way to interpret it. Anyway, to the partisans, Dr. Aschenauer writes in his the aforementioned book, War Without Borders, that there were maneuvers taking place, partisan maneuvers were taking place as early as spring 1941. The German army entered the Soviet Union in June 1941. So even before that, German intelligence had information that maneuvers took place and partisan units were being trained.
Okay.
This issue, he writes, Dr. Aschenauer, who was a defense lawyer, and he complained bitterly.
He was a defense lawyer at Nuremberg.
At Nuremberg, okay. Yeah. He was at Nuremberg and at some of the subsequent trials. Mm-hmm. So he was an insider. And he complained to the court that they continually ignored the partisan issue. He submitted an affidavit. That affidavit I tried to get from the aforementioned Institute of Zeitgeschichte, the Institute of Contemporary History. They said they can't send it to me because relatives are still alive. What one has to do with the other,
they sound just like the Holocaust Museum in Yad Vashem and the Auschwitz Museum and all of the same. They won't send you anything.
No, they're not.
Unless you're one of their team, and then you have access.
Yeah, and unless they can be assured that it's interpreted in the correct way. You know, I mean, I'm not going to get any of it. So, mm-hmm. Anyway, Aschenauer raised that issue because at Nuremberg, Hitler instructed Keitel, I believe it was, to issue an order. Now, this order was called original Partisan Warfare and Barbarossa Jurisdiction Order. Barbarossa is the name the Germans used for the operation in the East. They called it Operation Barbarossa. Partisan Warfare and Barbarossa Jurisdiction Order. The first part about partisan warfare has disappeared. Not even people that are critical of the official version mention that anymore. All it is called now, it's the Barbarossa Jurisdiction Order.
How interesting.
How interesting indeed. And I have that from a book by a German lawyer, August von Knierim. He published that book. It was published in Chicago in 1959. The original one in German was published 4 years prior, in 1955. And he bases this on records, German records from the trial. I have done my darndest to get a hold of these records. No way.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. So very revealing. I mean, you know, the way this material is kept from the public. All right, we have our break, and then we'll be back with our long segment, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll get a lot accomplished. Be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendovite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs, Extendovite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a two-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is an important message from hempusa.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit hempusa.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid three times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit hempusa.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and I'm here with Wilf Hank, and the topic today is partisan activity on the Eastern Front in World War II and why it has the story has changed so much over time. I'm going to give the call-in number now, 1-800-313-9443, if you'd like to call in with a question for Mr. Hank. I would prefer if you only call with a question and not with a comment at this time, because there's so much he yet has to say, and we really do want to hear from him. But I do welcome you if you want to call in with a question. So it's 1-800-313-9443. All right, Wilf, let's continue. Where were we?
We were at the order issued on May the 13th, and it was regarding partisan warfare. As I mentioned, the partisans,
the Hitler order,
it was that partisans had maneuvers and that partisans were being trained is also confirmed by Professor Seidler in his book Die Wehrmacht im Partisanenkrieg, the German armed forces are fighting partisans. He also confirms that German intelligence had good, solid information on partisans being trained. So the German high command had to, they had to make plans to combat these partisans. But as Eisenhower points out, and it was also Jodl at the IMT stated, they totally underestimated the extent of the problem. They did never realized how many partisans there were, and their efforts to combat them were never effective. They were, it was just makeshift, go do the best you can, and that's all. And we'll get into the numbers of damage inflicted and so on a little later on, and even if we have to take that over to tomorrow, and I kind of think we'll have to.
Okay.
Anyway, that order, this order was about partisan warfare at Nuremberg. The judges said that this order was illegal. How can it be illegal if an army makes preparations for something that has never, in Marxist ideology, Lenin said, partisan warfare is part of our program. This was, the Germans called this a new weapon later on, and it was. It was something that was never experienced, and the Germans tried to prepare for it, for the, whatever happened. So they allowed their troops to, the troop commanders to not send whoever they caught, to send the partisans back to be tried by army courts, by standard procedure, but to convict them if there, the evidence is good enough, convict them right there at the spot. And that was done. But as von Knieriem writes, it was, there was never, of course mistakes were made. There's no doubt. Because an army commander, in the middle of fighting a war, what's he going to do, launch an investigation? Of course not. They caught these people and they were shot. Mm-hmm. And at Nuremberg, again, that was considered to be illegal.
Well, you know, don't you think, how could that be? Because according to the Geneva Conventions, as I understand it, that we were supposedly fighting under, of course, Soviet had not signed that, but still, according to all the other allies, partisan warfare was illegal, and you had the right to execute partisans when you found them.
This is true. How it was interpreted, the actual shooting of the partisans, but the jurisdiction to hand over the power of judgment, if you will, to company commanders was condemned at Nuremberg. They said these people were not equipped.
Okay. So what? How does that fit the Geneva Conventions? Are you supposed to hand them over to some kind of a judicial?
Yes.
Group.
Yes.
Before you execute them.
Yeah, and
okay.
And understand. I mean, reality. Don't let these people at Nuremberg never let reality get in the way of a good story that they were concocting. So, yeah. I mean, they were shooting everywhere and everything was around them. Anyway, on July the 3rd, only the Germans entered on the 22nd, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. So not even 2 weeks later, Stalin, in a radio address, activated the partisan units. This is called his scorched earth speech. He said as much as partisan units have to spring up from everywhere fighting the Germans. Not one locomotive, not one grain, kernel of grain, nothing. Not one liter of gasoline should be left behind. All has to be destroyed. Now, to issue an order like that just after, not even 2 weeks after the war had started, the partisan units had to be in place. This is proof that they had been trained before and that they were existing, because you can't just on a radio announcement say, look guys, here now you all become partisans.
Yeah.
These people, you know, they had to be trained and so on and so forth. Now, I'm going to read just a little bit from a publication. I don't have the exact year, but I believe it was published in 1942, and it was published by the authority of Soviet War News, issued by the press department of the Soviet embassy, and Hutchinson Printers printed it in England. And the title of it is We Are Gorillas. And in the introduction, if I can find it, the writer goes in gorilla. Strangely enough, he calls it gorillas. Why? We don't know. In Russia, he says later on, gorillas are generally called partisans, and they spell it with a Z, P-R-B-A-R-T-I-Z-A-N-S. And they developed their skills, he writes, following the Soviet Revolution in 1917. While a life and death struggle was going on between whites and reds, between those who wanted to restore the inequities of the old regime and those who supported the government of the people, thousands of men and women, mostly peasants, joined the guerrillas. And he later on writes, from the very first day of the German invasion in June 1941, guerrilla bands were formed wherever the enemy appeared. After Stalin's call to the nation on July 3rd, I just mentioned that, when he urged the Soviet people to create in the German rear conditions impossible for the enemy, the guerrilla movement spread like wildfire. Leaders sprang up from everywhere. Men, women, and even children are fighting in these detachments, pitting their bravery and native ingenuity against the mechanized juggernaut of Nazism. They are constant terror to the German troops, who can never be sure that an innocent-looking clump of bushes does not conceal a machine gun, or that a simple peasant girl is not carrying a hand grenade in her market basket. End of quote. Is that not quite revealing? I mean, we're told that the Germans shot children, but here we have proof that they were involved. They were couriers. There's another book by I'll get into it later. He mentions that quite openly, that they sent children into the villages to bring supplies and so on. They helped.
Well, of course they did. Children were not considered something to be, you know, the way we like to consider them today in our Western societies, or some people like to consider them. But they've never been that way. They've always been brought into whatever was necessary as soon as they're old enough to do anything to help. And it's always been that way.
Of course.
And of course, there are lots. I don't know all the academic sources for this, but I know there's lots of places where this is discussed, openly, that of how proud they were of the partisan warfare and how effective it was and how much damage they were doing. So this,
exactly.
You know, they were not keeping this a secret.
No.
As far as I know.
But it is just that now this all has disappeared.
Oh, yeah. Well, now we talk about children like, if you touch anybody under the age of 18, you know, it's just a terrible thing, which is just doesn't fit reality.
No, and if a skeleton of a child is found, these two terrible Germans.
Yeah.
Well, really, I mean, this guy says right here that the Germans could never be sure where the next shot was coming from or the next hand grenade was thrown from. And
who's to say who these, if you find a skeleton of a child, that it was the Germans who killed that child.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's all kinds of killing going on and all sorts of damage being done. They were also being shot at, these partisans. And they didn't know who was there amongst them. They had children amongst them. You know, they got it too. So it wasn't always intentionally.
No. And as we have said often, no investigation worth that term has ever been undertaken. I mean, we're told about these mass shootings of Jews in certain areas here, towns. They're mentioned, and I'll get into that a little later on, too. But there has never been an investigation undertaken by impartials to see whether there is a grave there and how many are in there. And even if they were, it is claimed now by the historians that the Germans send out troops under Blobel to destroy, like to burn the bodies. You can't destroy the hole. The actual grave must still be there, and nothing has ever been done. Okay. Anyway.
Exactly. There aren't any.
There aren't any. I mean, yeah. Or else, well, why would they, if they were sure that they were there, why don't they go and look and show us, say, look here, you revisionists. Here's the proof. What are you talking about?
They have never done that in all these years.
They haven't. And Professor Mazur writes in his book that the reason for that is that they fear or they're concerned not to find what is allegedly there. And this is, he's absolutely right. And Professor Mazur, may he rest in peace, he died. I had a little bit of a correspondence with him, a few letters. And unfortunately, I had a few more questions for him, but he died rather suddenly. To get back to that gorilla thing here, they said that grain, oil, machinery, food, all are loaded onto lorries, peasant carts, evacuated to the rear, or handed over to the Red Army units. Cattle, livestock, poultry are driven off into forests and hidden. Whatever cannot be carted away, the villagers destroyed. The villagers then set fire to their own homes, applying the scorched earth policy. End of quote. Now here again, we hear about Germans destroying whole villages and so on and so forth. Pardon me? They burned them down themselves.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we're talking about something here that has never been, and here they're bragging about it. And again, he says, women and children also play an important part, either as active fighters and scouts or as secret helpers in the villages. If Fuller account of their work is given in a separate chapter, and I'm not going to read all of this, but it is this guerrilla or partisan issue was a real danger for the Germans, and it has helped greatly to defeat the German army.
Well, what about all the atrocities perpetrated on German soldiers by partisans? Are you going to get into that?
Yeah, we'll get in.
Patient? Okay.
Yeah, just be patient. And I don't know how many months we're going to be on this. But the getting just back to finish this off, the destruction caused by the retreating army, the Red Army, the German Einsatzgruppen issued reports. They were called Tätigkeits- und Lageberichte, situation, action and situation reports. And they detail the destruction. They show precisely what was done to repair the damage. Grain was destroyed. Some was left. They did their utmost to get their farms going again. The machinery was destroyed. They repaired the machinery, the farm machinery, so the harvests could be brought in. They repaired power stations. They repaired factories so that people could work again. They issued currencies in some areas. They did the best they could to again make it functional and to get things going again. We also have to hear just briefly, and that has nothing really, we're told that the Germans intentionally allowed millions of Russian POWs to starve. This is not true. There was nothing to eat. The Russians had destroyed everything, and there was absolutely nothing. They did their best.
Well, exactly. But, as an army advances, well, certainly as a German army advanced into the Soviet Union, they were depending on the resources of the Soviet Union to supply them in large measure. Isn't that not true?
Yes.
And when that wasn't there, when it had been destroyed, which was Stalin's intention,
yes,
to, you know, to do that, he didn't care about the Russian people starving or anything. That was the situation. Now, one question I have, I might have not been listening carefully enough. When you say that the Germans were helping them to repair things and get things plowed up again and so on, were there still people, Russians, left there behind after they had scorched the earth? I mean, after they had destroyed everything, were they still hanging around?
Of course. Of course. The peasants, the people
that... they all went east. They just
no.
all followed.
Oh, no. Okay. No, and they describe in detail what... Some of them welcomed the Germans because before that the Russians had this forced the farmers out. There was no more local farmers. It was all these big kolkhoz things there, these big co-ops as they would be called now, and no more private ownership. And the farmers now saw a chance to get their own land back. Of course, they took some of the stuff that's written in one of the reports that actually belonged to the landowners, and these landowners that had not been killed by the Russians, and a lot of these so-called kulaks were.
Okay, we have to go.
Protested, yeah.
We have to go.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer, and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Are you serious about maintaining or improving your health? If you are, you need Terravim. Terravim offers a full line of vitamins, minerals, and herbs for people serious about enjoying a healthy lifestyle. Our product lines include Alamax, Magnesite, Silver 100, Natura Health Products, Gala Herbs, and Terravim's private label, and undergo rigorous clinical studies by leading researchers and contain physician-grade research-based therapeutic doses of nutrients. All of our vitamin, mineral, and herb products are manufactured under current good manufacturing practices in an FDA-registered production facility, and we guarantee that the ingredients in the supplements are exactly what's on the label. We also provide free consultation for all our products along with general wellness information. All orders over $45 ship free, and all orders received by 3 p.m. ship the same day. When shopping online, enter the coupon code RBN for a 10% discount. To order now, call 1-866-647-4372. That's 1-866-647-4372, or visit terravim.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're almost to the end of today's show. And, Wilf, would you please, you are clarifying for me. there was a scorched earth policy, and in many places nothing was left. But they couldn't, I guess, carry that out everywhere. This was a huge affront. And so in some places, the people were there still in their villages and on their farms. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
That is correct. And the Germans tried to get, you see, it was June. We have to remember, harvest is August, September, depending which area you're in. Mm-hmm. And whatever had not been destroyed, the Germans tried their darndest to repair their farm machinery. Not all farm machinery was carried away. It was just made useless, okay. Like, you know, uh-huh. Sabotaged. Yeah. So the Germans did their best. There's one report where they restored a power dam. They had no power, no electricity.
And who was doing this? Was this the Einsatzgruppen that
was Yes, that was the Einsatzgruppen. This is in their reports. They initiated it and I guess supervised it because it was, you see, they were formed to keep peace and quiet behind the fighting front, their fighting line. It was in their interest to keep the population happy and fed as best as possible. So it was, they restored, there were huge amounts of money delivered to or sent to assist them. And I don't have the figures here right now, but hopefully I can get that together by tomorrow. From the German government.
This idea that that the Germans were just treated these Russians horribly, that they considered them, you know, subhuman and didn't care anything about them. This is really probably more the Soviets who were doing that to them, in one way or another, than the Germans. The Germans did try to help the people and work with the people, and they did try to get the people on their side in all these various, in Ukraine and you know, in Czechoslovakia and all along in these mm-hmm. places. There mm-hmm. they had some tough policies, but they also had some very positive policies. It was a mixture.
Yes, and I mean, you look at the normal soldier or sergeant or lower rank, what the heck, they weren't racist or anything. They had to fight a war, they did. They followed orders, but mm-hmm. They weren't killers or anything like that. And they wanted peace and quiet. They didn't want to shoot any unarmed civilians. And this is all nonsense. This is this propaganda that is brought out. And a lot of it is based on these reports issued by these German, by the Russian or Soviet extraordinary state commission that maybe we can get into that a little later on, because they kept talking about fascist killers and so on and so forth, which is all just propaganda anyway. But just to close
okay,
this
we've
off.
Got, yeah, close off. We've got
to,
we've got
to close this off. Yeah. We, by the spring of, at first the partisans operated pretty well independently. A lot of the Red Army soldiers joined them that had gotten away that were not. But in the spring of 1942, they were, General Ponomarenko was in charge of them, a Red Army general. The Red Army took control of it. In the same area, in the summer of 42, they controlled an area of 200,000 square kilometers, about the size of England and Scotland together, the partisans controlled.
Wow.
That no German ventured in there. And
okay, we're going to have to stop, Wilf. I want to thank you very much for what you've given us today, and we look forward to being with you again tomorrow, having you here with us, and we will continue with this very, very interesting and necessary and important discussion. Goodbye, listeners, and come back tomorrow.
The next round of the worst